Coming up on Windows Weekly, we will talk about whether the Surface laptop is actually lappable, plus new updates to Windows 10 and the Xbox One X, which I am still calling Project Scorpio. Thank you very much. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode number 522, recorded Wednesday, June 14th, 2017. A Woman, a Few Apps. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/windows. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Cloudflare. More than 6 million websites, apps, APIs, and SaaS companies use Cloudflare's service to weather whatever the internet throws at them. For a free online chat session with a Cloudflare support engineer, visit cloudflare.com/twit. Welcome to Windows Weekly. This is your weekly installment of all things Microsoft. We're all friends here. We all talk about Microsoft. No one makes fun of anyone. Leo Laporte is out this week. I am Megan Maroney filling in. And Mary
Megan,
Jo-
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I feel like you don't understand the purpose of this show. Actually,
I was trying to start on a positive note, and but Paul, yep. Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com, the man who can make fun of anything, and Mary Jo Foley, also not strangely configured, despite her the fact that she cannot fit a laptop on her lap. We will talk about that later. Thank you so much for coming here and sharing your positive and negative views of Windows this week.
Wow.
You have a lot to
well,
live
thank
up
you
to
as
after
well.
That.
I do. Yeah, you do. You do. Well, let's start with the fun stuff first. The Xbox One X. I am still calling it Project Scorpio because that sure. is a much better name, but we're told to call it Xbox One X. I think this is your beat, Paul, although I'd love to know what Mary Jo feels about the Xbox One X.
She piped in the notes,
she
I
did.
Noticed.
Yes, she did.
She did. And it's funny that yesterday I said to Paul on messaging, I'm like, so I don't sound idiotic on Windows Weekly. How do you say Xbox One with the X? Is it Xbox One 10? Is it Xbox One X? And the reason I ask is I'm one of those people.
GIF to send to her, but.
No, you know what? I'm one of those people who could never train myself because I don't talk about it often to call Apple's operating system OS 10. I always call it OS X.
Mm-hmm. Right. A lot of people did do that.
And I still do. So that's why I was curious about that.
Well, now they leave it off, so you can just not call it anything.
I know. Now it doesn't matter. Yeah, so here's my summary of the announcement, and this is all I'll say in this segment.
Oh, come on.
TLDR, well, I mean, aside from you want to know about Xbox One X? Want to know about Xbox One X? Here's what you need to know. It's another black gaming console, costs $500, ships November 7th. There we go. You're done.
I have a slightly more nuanced view of it than that.
Do you? Do you? Surprising.
It's future look. It's forward looking, right, Paul?
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, there's a big change going on in the video game world. Actually, there's a bunch of big changes, right? And so consoles are being revved midstream, which never happened before, right? So you've got this roughly 8-year product life cycle. In the past, that 8 years was one console, no changes, you know, except for maybe some cosmetic and cost reducing type things. But the specs basically were always the same. Microsoft and Sony this time are revving their consoles midstream. And there's some huge advantages to that, including backwards compatibility without having to go through emulation or whatever. And then you can address new capabilities. In this case, like 4K, UHD, HDR, you know, things like that. Microsoft is kind of taking that to a different level as well, because they've expanded the notion of what Xbox is to include Windows 10 PCs. And while it's not 100% compatible across the board, it never will be, we already have a bunch of things that are common between the two platforms. You can play some of the same games through Xbox Play Anywhere. And there were hints this past week that that might be bringing backward compatibility to Windows 10, which means you might be able to someday play Xbox games, actual Xbox games, on Windows 10 PCs as well, which would be amazing. And so, you know, for Microsoft, though, and for the Xbox One X in particular, this is a chance to one-up Sony technologically, which is important because Microsoft hasn't had a console that was technically more advanced than a Sony console since the original Xbox. And, you know, they, I would say they roughly tied the previous generation from like a sales perspective, but this generation, they're getting killed. It's about 2-1. And Sony revealed this week that they have, I think it was 60.4 million PlayStation 4s sold to customers. Microsoft third-party estimates is about 33 million. So it's roughly 2-1. And so this is an opportunity to attract the hardcore gamers, the guys who are going to have those expensive sets, those expensive homes, theater systems that they can connect these things to, and provide really expensive PC capabilities at a reasonable price for what it is.
Right. It's cheaper than a new iPhone. So, you know,
yeah, no, that's judgment. Right. And not a lot of complaining there every year when we have to upgrade those. Mm-hmm. This, you know, it's the video game world. So there's a lot of silliness involved. And by that, I mean, there are people who believe that Microsoft combining Xbox with Windows 10 means there's no such thing as exclusive anymore. There are people who believe that when companies go to the E3 trade show, which is where this announcement was made, they should only talk about games. I don't agree with any of that stuff. I think what they're doing is really smart. And granted, it's driven by the fact that they are getting killed, and they might have gone in a more traditional route otherwise. But that just benefits all of us, you know. And so this is neat because it literally does leapfrog the PS4 Pro technologically. And that's been kind of a long time coming. And I think for Xbox fans, it's just kind of a big deal.
Do you have a PlayStation 2, Paul, or just – do you also have a PlayStation
4,
or just
yeah.
So you have both.
I do have a PlayStation as well. And I go in and out of it to kind of test to see where it's at. Frankly, from a – I don't know, not from a games perspective, because I don't actually have a lot of insight into that. But as far as the general performance and the look of the games and all that kind of thing, I find the two consoles to be comparable today. I don't have a PlayStation 4 Pro, which is the 4K, sort of 4K version of the PlayStation. So I can't really say, and of course I don't have this either. So I don't really, all I can go off of is the video stuff. But people have different opinions about the quality of the games on each platform. That's another thing in the video game world I'm not a big fan of is the notion of console exclusives. And, you know, people might pick Xbox because they love Halo and it's the only place you can play Halo. And people might pick Sony because they hate themselves and they don't understand what's good and what's bad. But I'm not judging. I'm just saying we all have different opinions.
So is this something, I mean, you say the price is right. Is this something that you think that you will get when it comes out?
Yeah, I'll pre-order this first day that I can. Absolutely.
When can you? It comes out in November, right? When can you pre-order?
Yeah, that I don't know. Actually, I keep going back to the Xbox site to see if I can do it now. But that's a good question. And in fact, you know, if you think about it, there will probably be various. Well, actually, maybe there won't be, but there might be different deals. You know, if you want to buy it at Best Buy, they might throw in something for doing it there and so forth. So we'll see how that evolves. But yeah, no date yet on that.
And the branding's being updated.
Yeah, they've changed the logo. There was. I don't know if we talked about this last week or if it didn't make the cut, but sometime in the past week, this trademark S with a slash through it was revealed to be, you know, a Microsoft trademark. And there was a lot of speculation that that must stand for Scorpio and that maybe they were actually going to call this thing Xbox Scorpio. And isn't that kind of cool? And, blah, 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 you know, and as it turns out, it's just the new logo for the Xbox One S, which is the existing console. They also have a new logo for the X as well, which has a similar kind of a slash element to it. But as I wrote in my little post about it, you know, it's a fog of war thing. We all had Project Scorpio in the brain. So when we saw this, that's where we went with it. I think I don't know anyone said, no, it's an Xbox One S logo. And the other thing is, you know, it's that, I think that's the thing we all do as people, we get stuck on things. And the best example I have is when you're listening to a song and you want to think of another song, but you can't because the song playing is in your head and you can't possibly get it out of there because it's right there. And when you're so hyper-focused on Xbox One Scorpio right before it comes out, right before they announce it, it's hard to imagine thinking about, you know, like we don't, no one's thinking about Xbox One S. So it's hard to put your mind in that kind of mindset, I guess, or whatever.
Can I ask an operating system question about this?
Sure.
I don't know if it was a joke, but I saw people during the webcast tweeting that Xbox One X is based on Windows 10 S.
No.
But is it the core? Well, like, what's the core inside? You know?
What's that?
What's the core inside? I mean, it's
well, so the core of Xbox One all along has been Windows, right? It's the same core, right. but it's not really Windows. It's Hyper-V. So it's,
okay, right.
It's probably more correct to say it's based on Windows Server in a way, because the idea of this thing is that they can partition operating environments, right. And that's part, I guess, part of the key to its emulation stuff.
So it's the same as Xbox One or different?
The operating system itself, it's probably an updated version of the same operating system because it's the same. Okay. It is an Xbox One. It's not a new system. So if I, off the top of my head, I want to say the original Xbox One, when it first came out, was actually based on Windows 8.1 or whatever. And then they updated it to Windows 10 over a series of those system updates that they do. Mm-hmm. And so it's still Windows 10 era, you know, version of Windows. But I mean, architecturally, I suppose installing Hyper-V changes Windows somewhat, but not like it does on the server. Maybe I'm just making this up, but it seems to me it's a little bit more like the way server is.
Okay.
Architected or whatever. Yeah.
It wasn't a trick question. I was just curious because I saw that and I'm like, based on Windows 10 S? Really?
No, I don't know where that comes from. I mean, I guess the theory there is that it doesn't run Win32 games or apps or anything, right? So I guess you could say, oh yeah, it's just like Windows 10 S. I mean, and it sort of is because it sort of runs, you know, store apps, right? I mean, does literally run store apps, but not all store apps. You know, it doesn't run all the apps that Windows 10 S runs. I mean, I think these things are all just different derivatives of the same soupy mess that is Windows 10.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
So I don't know if you saw this news this morning. The avatars are getting an update in the fall as well to make them more flexible. I guess they're using the Unity engine for this.
Yeah. I didn't pay too much attention to this, but I thought they had announced this earlier, and maybe now what they're saying is they're actually coming out, because I know there's been a push to make the avatars look more realistic in the sense that they look more like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit kind of cartoon kind of thing with like a 3D kind of effect. And also to be respectful to people who have special needs. You know, there's avatars that have wheelchairs and, you know, artificial limbs and so forth, things like that.
Yeah, you can have a prosthetic or you can be pregnant. Too.
I know.
Yeah,
Did you see that one?
Yeah.
Oh, finally, like, they have fat avatars. So that's what I needed. I could never make my avatar thick enough.
Well, it says that they're totally flexible and gender neutral. So that my biggest question is, can you use the baby bump on
on a man? I assume yes, you can.
Okay. Thank goodness.
Knowing Microsoft, they've so thoroughly embraced everything of this PC. The other PC.
The other PC. Yeah. There were some Minecraft and craft announcements. Now Minecraft is cross-platform. Yeah. This is really exciting. I don't understand how it's going to work. I mean, we have Minecraft on the MacBook versus on the iPad, and they're pretty different. I mean, Pocket Edition is pretty different, and I don't know how. So are they going to update Pocket Edition, and it's going to be the full edition?
Yep. Yeah, they're going to update all of them to match each other's features and then to become compatible as well in the back end. And so this is the dream with Minecraft. In fact, not soon after Microsoft bought Mojang, by the way. I don't know if you noticed during the telecast, they said Mojang, I think was the way they said
really?
It. It was something like that. It was almost like a silent J, like a I can't remember exactly how they said it, but it was way off from the way I would have said it. But in any event. Ever since this purchase was made, people have been calling on Microsoft to bring these things together because they have I think three major version families, right? PC, like a desktop, console, and mobile. And then there are other versions as well. There's VR, there's the legacy Java version and so forth. Obviously, there's an education version. But it always seemed like a weird limitation to me that I could maybe go to an iPad and start a world and start populating with stuff and build things. But then when I got to the PC, I couldn't log into my account and have that thing appear. And then I could do other things with it, you know. They're never going to be 100% compatible, I guess. There are going to be certain things, like you might have to be on the PC to do certain things. But once you get to that same world on your tablet or phone or whatever, those things will be there and you can still use them. It's just that certain maybe coding related things, for example, might only work on the PC or Mac. But this is, you know, if it wasn't for the Xbox One S, in the scope of gaming and gaming news and E3, Microsoft especially, I mean, this might have been the biggest announcement of the day. Minecraft will also be available in 4K, which is hilarious because it's, you know, it's like an 8-bit, you know, graphic style. So it's not like it's becoming photorealistic. It's going to look pretty much, you know, the way it looks. But that's actually really huge news.
Right. I mean, do you think it portends a future of more games being cross-platform?
Yeah, I do. You know, there's a lot of places where Microsoft can do interoperability between these platforms. I mentioned earlier this notion that maybe someday Xbox backward compatibility might come to Windows 10 PCs. That would be amazing. It would be amazing. And there was some speculation ahead of this conference that maybe the Xbox One S was essentially just a PC, you know, and that this would be the way we get to that next generation where it's just all the same thing. It doesn't really matter how you do it. I don't really see that happening anytime soon, but it's, you know, you can almost imagine a PC spec that was like an Xbox certified thing that could run these games. And it was some kind of guaranteed level of performance, which is probably what you would need. But there have been efforts in the past, including some in the Microsoft sphere, including some in this current generation, for interoperability between platforms. You know, there was, I just got the name of it, Shadowfall, maybe was the name of it, that did cross-platform between Xbox 360 and Windows PCs. And then in this generation, we have the Xbox Plentyware games. And there's now probably dozens of them, but games where you can by yourself play on the PC, then switch to the console, and it's the same game, and your achievements carry along, and your game progress carries along. There's some multiplayer stuff along those lines as well. Microsoft has been slowly building multiplayer modes into Gears of War 4 that work across platform. But it's just not a complete picture. It's hard because these things are so different. But a game like Minecraft is a great first place to start for full interoperability because it's so simple is a tough word. But I mean, it's not a 3D action shooter with photorealistic graphics. I'm sure it has a complicated platform behind it. And certainly it's full featured and all that stuff. But it's a great place to do it because it is the type of game that would work well on a phone. It would work well on a tablet, work well on a PC, work well on a console. It works in VR. There's all these possibilities. So, yeah, I mean, if they can pull this off, and it looks like they're going to, maybe this is the start of something bigger.
Yeah, I mean, you won't have like the uncanny valley issue or anything like that.
Yep.
No one, you know, Steve never looks human. So, so over the weekend there was the Xbox One X, aka mm-hmm. I'm still calling it Project Scorpio, and then PlayStation announced Monday night they made some announcements. Did anything that they say overshadow what Microsoft had already announced with the Xbox One X?
No, I mean, with nothing to announce from a hardware perspective, Sony did at E3 what companies typically do at E3, is which they should throw up a demo reel of 2 hours of video game, you know, previews, right? Which is fine. I mean, that's, you know, what E3 is. I don't really pay too much attention to that stuff. But at the start of E3, Sony also issued a press release where they talked about the strength of the PS4 ecosystem. And I think it was time to kind of counter what Microsoft was saying around the Xbox One, to kind of remind people, oh, by the way, you know, we're doing really, really good. 60.4 million consoles sold, for example, across PlayStation 4 and the new Pro version. But there was an interesting figure in there that I knew I could compare to something Microsoft had said recently. They said, the PlayStation ecosystem has more than 70 million monthly active users worldwide as of the end of March 2017. And I thought Microsoft must have announced their comparable number for Xbox Live, which they did. 52 million. It grew 13% in the quarter, which, by the way, also ended at the end of March 2017. So 52 compared to 70 is a much better comparison than 33 compared to 60, right? It's a much closer number. And that suggests that Microsoft's strategy of bringing Xbox Live to Windows is paying off, because they only have 30 million-ish people on Xbox One. They clearly have some people still on previous generation, maybe Xbox 360, but they have this kind of open market now of 500 million plus, whatever it is, Windows 10 active users as well, who could become active Xbox Live users because they have that system on their computer and they have those Xbox Play Anywhere games. And I think that speaks to the strategy and the reason why Microsoft is not focusing on console sales. They're focusing on this, what I would call an engagement number. Microsoft doesn't break out paid versus unpaid subscribers. They do talk about the total hours per week that the users spend over the course of a quarter. Sometimes they didn't do it this past quarter, so I can't compare those numbers. But I did. I found that active user number to be very interesting, because five sevenths is a much bigger percentage than one half.
So do we have any other announcements from E3? We have Wistful in the chat room has said, I'm still waiting for Windows Weekly to start. He's not a gamer.
Yes.
Do not give Mary Jo that evidence.
Yes. In fact, you've just given me an opening for something we need to talk about.
Okay.
Today, in 1976, June 14th, 1976, it was the day that The Gong Show premiered. I found out from Thomas Tucker today. So in honor of all the Xbox news at the beginning of this show.
Yep.
That's my gong. The gong that Paul gave me for my housewarming gift.
So the Gong Show is being remade. And I don't know. You don't watch TV,
really?
So you probably. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Nope.
The host is the most freaky looking thing I've ever seen. I have no idea what's going on there. It is bizarre. But the host of the original Gong Show, of course, was Chuck Barris. I'm trying to find this thing, because Chuck Barris wrote a book, which I actually had as an Audible pick years ago, called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. It was actually made into a movie with Sam Rockwell as well. But basically, it's a fictional biography where he was secretly a CIA assassin during his years on The Gong Show, and then later as well. And it sounds ridiculous. It is an excellent book, and you should definitely read it.
That's so weird. I can't believe they're remaking The Gong Show. I mean, that's like,
I can't either.
Every
so look this
show
up.
On
you look, try to find the trailer for this, because the guy, he looks like it's so cartoonish looking. He looks it can't be a human being. Like, he looks like something that would have been in like a David Lee Roth video from the 1980s or something. Like, it's really strange.
Thursday, June 27th.
Yeah, look at this guy.
Who's this cheeky monkey?
He kind of looks like Robin Williams, but in lots of makeup.
I hate it.
Oh, my goodness.
Gong.
You put this together last night.
Legendary host Tommy Maitland makes his American debut.
Legendary host.
The Gong Show. Premiering Thursday, June 22nd, part of ABC's Summer Fun and Games.
Oh, it's next week.
Weird, right?
That is really weird. I think
it's disturbing.
Mm-hmm. I don't really watch regular TV. Is that what TV is like these days?
So here's the thing: I do watch regular TV, and I hope not, because that is the scariest, weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, it makes
it's going to be hard to remake The Gong Show, because when The Gong Show first came out, there wasn't really like reality TV shows like there are now.
Right.
So how do you like one up it so that you're in that?
You can't.
Level
that show was so quirky and weird for its day. And that guy, I mean, Chuck Barris was amazing. If you haven't, it's worth watching old shows just to watch this guy. He was so great. But yeah, everything's like a reality show now. You know, we watch those House Hunter shows, and it has nothing to do about finding a house. It's about watching two people argue with each other. And I don't know. If I want to see that, I'll go on Twitter.
So in the chat room, they're saying that perhaps that is Mike Myers in
makeup. Okay. That makes it makes sense because it looks like someone in heavy makeup.
Okay.
It does.
And actually that makes sense because it sort of vaguely resembles that big, like the fat character you paid in those Austin Power movies.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's that's from twincities.com.
The legendary source. Host guy no one's ever heard of.
Yeah. In the guy, yeah, Mike Myers in the guise of a new character named Tommy Maitland hosts the show.
Okay.
So
I like Mike Myers. That's too bad.
All right. I think we've gotten everything non Windows OS related out of.
Oh, I don't know if that's true.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good. All right. The Surface laptop arrives. Yeah, it's true. We have to talk about the size of Mary Jo's lap and whether it's normal or not.
Finally.
Finally.
Right. Were you starved as a child, Mary Jo? Or what happened?
We've never seen, like a lot of people have never seen your legs. And so we're not sure if
Mary Jo grew up on a back porch in Framingham, Massachusetts. And the cold winters contributed to her short legs.
Exactly.
All right. So you don't you don't review product very often, but you have the Surface laptop running Windows 10S. What did you think?
Here it is. In fact, I have the lovely burgundy model. So where to even start? So first, I think a little insider baseball on how I got this, because I was frankly surprised that Microsoft gave me this laptop to review. I mean, I asked to review it several times. Probably my nagging helped me get it. But my pitch to them on why I should review this was I am the target audience for this laptop. For a couple of reasons. One, because I don't think any of your other, I don't think any of your other Surface products are lappable. So I'm curious if this laptop, you know, with the name laptop might be lappable. And also, I am the perfect person to review Windows 10S because I am a woman of few apps. And the ones I need are almost all non-Win32 apps. So I think I would be the perfect person to review this. So when it showed up, I was pleasantly surprised, kind of stunned even. And I got it 10 days ago or so. And I have to say, I mostly like this laptop. There are some things I didn't love about it, which I wrote about in my review. Not like many of the people who did review it, I'm not keen on the Alcantara being on the keyboard. I don't really like it. I know it's supposed to be a luxury fabric and it's supposed to make you feel like this is a premium laptop and it's very luxurious. Mm-hmm. But I found it to be kind of annoying more than luxurious. And here's why. I was trying to describe this to somebody, maybe Paul. I can't remember who I was telling this to. But this laptop, when I rest my wrists on the base, it's not just my wrists that are on it. It's like up to here on my arm that's on the keyboard in order to reach the keys. And so I have this fuzzy fabric on my wrists and I don't like the feeling of it. I don't. It feels like a pool table cover. That's what Alcantara feels like to me. You know, because some people are like, oh, is it really fuzzy? Is it really thick? And like one person like said, is it like a shag carpet?
It's like a shag carpet.
Yeah. It is not like a shag carpet. It's more like a pool table cover, if you've ever felt a pool table cover. That's what it feels like. And it's been really, really hot in New York the past few days, at like 93, 94. So me using this in my apartment when I didn't have my air conditioning on with that fuzzy fabric on my wrists, it just felt like sweaty. I didn't like it. I know some people are going to love it and say, wow, I can't believe you didn't like it, but I just did not care for the Alcantara. I also was worried about spilling on it and getting food on it. And I mean, you shouldn't spill anything on your keyboard, obviously, but I feel like when you have a plastic keyboard, you don't really worry as much if you get a little water on it or whatever. This, I'm like, oh man, I can't get anything on this. Like every time I was using it, I was like wiping my hands and like trying to make my hands really clean. So yeah, I think that's kind of weird. As far as lappability goes, though, I get to put one of these laptops on my lap the day Microsoft announced it. I only get to do it for a second, basically.
That was a second that lived in infamy, though, Mary Jo.
I know. because they took a picture of me doing it and I had a face on like, oh man, yeah. It's not lappable again, right? So I've been trying it in all different chairs and couches and I'll say it's way more lappable than any other surface I've used. But I still would not give it a high score for lappability. Like in my review, I said I give it a 7.5 on a scale of 10.
It's like it fit on 75% of my lap.
I know. So. I just made up a number there. Yeah. But one reason I didn't find it that lappable is the base of this is completely smooth.
Yeah.
And so it's really smooth and it just slides really easily. Like here for comparison is the base of my HP Spectre. See these like bumps yeah. on it? That They're really like helps grippy. It stay on your lap. Yeah.
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 They help like, it stay on the table too, right? They're kind of grippy, right. aren't they?
Yeah. This has never ever slid off my lap, the HP Spectre. And this a few times has.
So you're saying company that has been making PCs for 30 years versus
might know more.
A company that is apparently dabbling in PCs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe knows more. Yeah. The aspect ratio on the Surface laptop is the same as other surfaces or whatever you would say. It's 3:2. That means it's still a little top heavy. Like what's good is when you push on it, if you want to use touch with it, it doesn't wobble like the Surface Book does. But when you have it on your lap, it's still a speck top heavy. And I asked Microsoft why are all your laptops and tablets top heavy? And they said it's the aspect ratio.
Yeah.
So
I think you had a picture of it next to the other one, right? Where is it like an inch taller basically when it's open? Yeah. Something like that?
Like a half inch taller than the Spectre and it's narrower. So, you know, what's interesting is these two laptops, the Spectre and this laptop are almost identical in weight, but wow, this one feels the Surface feels so much heavier. Surface laptop. And again, it's because of how the weight I believe it's because of how the weight is distributed in this. Like it's a smaller surface area to distribute the weight in. The top, you know, where the display is much heavier than it is on the Spectre. And all those things weigh in when you're using it. You definitely also notice the difference there.
Compare the Spectre you're using doesn't have touch or pen support.
Doesn't, right.
Right, so that would... Right. Add some
right, that would add
the
some
screen
width.
Part and right. maybe factor in as well.
You're right. Yep. So you can use a pen with it, but I didn't try that. I don't have a pen for one, and I didn't try it because I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't normally do it, and I'm trying to use the device in a way that I would normally use it.
Notepad.
Lots of notepad has happened on this laptop, and I can
report. How does notepad look on that laptop?
Very well. It looks excellent on this laptop. Yeah, the screen resolution on this is great. There are a lot of really good things about it. Screen resolution is great. You know what's amazing, though, is Windows Hello. It's gotten really, really, really fast. Like, so fast that when you open the cover of the laptop, it just sees you in, like, the little crack, and it's, like, recognizes you now.
I think it saw you when you were holding it up to the side. I saw it working. You were just, like, holding it up
to
the side.
It really wanted to identify you.
Yeah,
it did. It did.
Yeah. I mean, Windows Hello. Like, I've been using it on the Surface Book, and people are like, oh, I don't use that. I'm like, it's gotten better.
It has gotten way better. Way, way better. To the point where I don't have it on the Spectre. It doesn't come on the Spectre, but it really makes me kind of go, oh, okay, that could be something nice to have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because I used to hate it. I was like, oh, it's so annoying. It's so slow. And half the time it doesn't recognize me. But now I feel like it's really gotten much better.
Yeah, you don't notice because I open with my MacBook as open with my Apple Watch. And this is faster than that. It's just, you know, it's just the time with the Apple Watch. It's just like opening with your Apple Watch. But this is just opens and it starts.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever have problems typing on a keyboard where the thing on your wrist, like I have a Fitbit, you have an Apple Watch. I don't know if Mary Jo probably has a normal watch. Does that ever, you know, watch. You kind of clunk it on the keyboard you know, base or whatever. Yep. So does the Alcantara make that a little less terrible, or is that not matter?
So I didn't wear my watch with it because I was worried about wrecking the fabric on it.
You should wreck the fabric. I think you should dump a Coke on it and some Cheetos.
Yeah, well, that's what Wall Street Journal, the guy who reviewed it ate a bag of Doritos while he was reviewing it. So he could see, like, hey, you know, like, this is what people do. They eat over their laptops.
It's a scientific method.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how did
I didn't try
up?
That. Not well.
Mm. Yeah, it went orange.
Well, that was what I was worried about, like, just grease kind of getting on it. Just, like, and staining. Yeah.
It's even tough because like you can't replace lotion. It, right?
I know, right? It's on your laptop.
With, the laptop, you get, I mean, a Surface Pro, you can get a new cover if you have to.
Right, right. They said Microsoft says they've added an extra layer. I think they said of polyurethane on this to try to make it even more, more resilient. And they also say if you get it dirty, you can take a damp cloth and wipe it off, and it should last pretty well. But you know, they've also said it's like a fabric on a luxury handbag, and I don't own any luxury handbags, but I have a suede handbag, and I'll tell you that. Cleaning that thing and just how it gets dirty without you even trying to get it dirty. I'm worried about the keyboard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So have they said exactly what makes it different than just felt? I mean, that's what covers a pool table, right? Felt.
Yeah.
But it's slightly different than felt.
Is
felt a natural thing or is that manufactured? I don't know anything about felt.
I guess like wool, like felting is from like wool, sheep's wool. So
because felt, if you have a pool table, if you've seen a pool table, you know, it wears down pretty obviously where things happen a lot. Right. And I think the goal, this thing is completely manufactured. It is. I believe it's made out of petroleum or something. Like it's a very strange melange of chemicals and materials.
Right. Yeah, it was developed in Italy. If you look up Alcantara, there are tons of websites about it, and there's a lot of information because it's been used on things like steering wheels, right? So Microsoft's not the first one to use it, but they're the first one to put it on a keyboard.
I get a bad feeling.
It's crazy how many reviews got really hung up on the Alcantara thing. Like, it really was a stumbling block in most of the reviews.
Well, it's the one big differentiator, isn't it? I mean...
For me, the one big differentiator is Windows 10 S. Noticed a lot of people who reviewed this laptop did what you're allowed to do, which is upgrade it to Windows 10 Pro and then review the laptop.
And you did not.
I did not.
So that's, for one thing, I think, maybe the most interesting. Well, the lapability thing was the most interesting, but your ability to coexist with Windows 10 S is kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. I know. I kind of thought I would be able to because what Windows 10 S is a lockdown version of Windows 10 Pro where they only allow you to install apps from the store, right? So I tried to install Chrome immediately since I use Chrome all the time and it let me download Chrome. And then when I tried to install it, it was like, nope, it's not a secure app. It's not a trusted app. So that made me use Edge, which I keep saying I need to try to use more. And I've been using Edge only with this. Well, not that I had an option, but that's what I've been using all these 10 days with it. And it's way better than I thought it was, Edge. I think I can do most everything I wanted to do with Edge, but I wish it had more extensions. There are still aren't very many available.
I just it's still also find it hardwired to be leisurely. To use
Bing.
You know?
It's also hardwired to use Bing, right? So you can't switch the search engine in Bing, in Edge to be Google. So whenever I wanted to cross-check something on Google, I just went to google.com, obviously. But
that is actually really strange.
Yeah.
It's weird that they let you download it, but not install it.
Like, I know.
Why let you download it?
I know. I saw it downloading. I'm like, oh, so wait, I thought we couldn't do this. So you can, but you just can't install it. So yeah, I liked Windows 10 S. Like I always say, like, I don't use a lot of apps. I really don't. And the things that I do use as apps, many of them are available as web apps. I don't really use a lot of store apps, but luckily Notepad was preloaded on it. I actually worried about that for a minute, but it was there. And I know there are Notepad alternatives in the store I could have used, but I just wanted my real Notepad. And otherwise, it's like I use mostly websites these days, right? Whenever I, like for our publishing system, we have a website. Anything I do with like OneNote or Excel or Word, I use the online versions of the apps. And not to say that you have to, because the UWP versions of the Office apps are in the store, so you can download those from the store. I think for people who are like me, who are like knowledge workers, quote unquote, or productivity workers, you could live with Windows 10S and not have to go to Pro, unless you have line of business apps or 132 apps that you really can't live without.
There is one goofy issue that's kind of a short-term problem, which is that Microsoft is bringing Office to the store in the form of Centennial apps, but that's not actually available today. Mm-hmm. So if you buy a Surface laptop right now, and your theory is, well, all I need is Microsoft Office, and then I could do store for the rest of it. I don't believe that's actually possible yet, right?
Well, aren't there the UWP apps already in the store?
There are but I mean, I'm talking about the full Office 2016 apps.
Oh, yeah. I think most people do not need the full apps. I feel safe saying that. Using the UWP version of Excel versus the full Excel, if you're a power user of Excel, you will not be happy with UWP. But if you're a casual user of it, I think you'll be okay with UWP.
Do you use a Chromebook ever, Mary Jo?
I think that's the other reason maybe I got this laptop to review. Because I said to the Microsoft people when I was making my pitch, I'm like, I think I could actually use a Chromebook and be okay with it.
Oh, I did too.
And it was like, whoop, get her a laptop.
When you were talking about Windows 10S, that's what I was thinking about was Chromebook. And I just got one of these iPad Pro things. And even with iOS 11, it's really not there yet for this kind of thing you're mm-hmm. describing. But you were talking about, I need to write words and I need to put them onto a website. And I can do that from Windows 10S. And I was thinking, you could do that from a Chromebook too. Mm-hmm. You could do it from an iPad. In fact, we know of someone who does do that, but it is so ponderous and so tedious mm-hmm. compared to how efficient you can be on a computer that has, like a touchpad with a pointer and, the ability to easily select fields and, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. Listener's asking, what about TweetDeck with Edge? It works fine. TweetDeck on Edge. Totally fine.
I love these very specific questions. I can't switch to 10S unless I can run TweetDeck.
Well, that was something I worried about. I have to tell you, because there's very few things I use, but few things that I do use, I use them extensively. Like if they said to me, well, you can use the Twitter app from the store, I'd be like, nope, deal breaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you said you're a woman of few apps, but many extensions. What extensions are you missing?
So AdBlock is there, which is good. I wish the extension for blocking automatic playing videos was there. I don't believe that is there.
Yep, it's not.
And otherwise, not a ton of things. That one, though, is like one of them I've really noticed this week. I'm like, oh, because everybody's tuning their sites to autoplay video, and it's so annoying. Mm-hmm. And Google is going to do something about that. But since you can't run Chrome on Windows 10S, that doesn't really help you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't see Microsoft really doing that anytime soon. But they do have some interesting things that they're building into Edge in the future, and we can talk about that. I want to talk about Windows 10 fast ring builds, and we're also going to talk about Intel and Windows XP even. But first, I want to take a minute to thank our sponsor of the show, Blue Apron. It is around lunchtime for me. I don't know about you, but I am hungry and I'm going to talk about food, and I'm going to do it for you because Blue Apron will help anyone who doesn't have time to shop and cook. What Blue Apron does is they'll send you a box of food, the exact amount of food that you need to make a meal, a gourmet meal, and you don't have to shop for it. It comes right to your door with all the ingredients measured in tiny little bottles of vinegar, or one egg all packaged up in a soft little container, or one head of lettuce or chives or whatever you need. And it comes with instructions to make that meal, and you can keep the instructions there on a nice firm piece of paper so you can make it again. One of the best things I like about Blue Apron is you don't have to get it every day. You don't even have to get it every week. You can get it when you need it. You can customize the food when you get it, and you can customize what you get. So if you are a vegetarian, if you are a vegan, if you are a pescatarian, if you only eat food with meat in it, all of those options are there for you. And they have the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. So whatever you like to eat, it's going to be a high standard that comes in the box. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. And you can make them in 40 minutes or sometimes even less. And the ingredients are seasonal. I love that about it. That means that they're going to be better quality because they're in season. And they will also ship the exact amount, as I said, of each ingredient required for a recipe. And that reduces food waste, which is good for you and good for everyone. Their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. No bruised peaches in your Blue Apron box. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They deliver to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want them. You can customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Some upcoming meals include warm smoked trout and asparagus salad and fingerling potatoes and garlic croutons, spiced zucchini enchiladas with creamy lime and tomato rice, elote-style vegetable tostados with summer squash, poblano peppers, and cilantro rice, peach honey glazed chicken with mashed sweet potatoes, collard greens, and Thai basil. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping just by going to blueapron.com/windows. Make sure to add windows at the end so they know we sent you to them. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/windows. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Windows Weekly. All right, Windows 10 Fast Ring build was full of a bunch of new features.
Yeah.
Who would like to talk about what those new features are?
I don't want to talk
either
about
of us.
This.
Neither. Okay.
You don't?
No. Well, since you were just talking about Edge, I mean, one of the things I'd like to kind of highlight is, well, two things. I mean, first of all, this is possibly the biggest build in terms of new features Microsoft has ever released of the Windows 10 Insider Preview. It came as kind of a surprise. And a bunch of those features related to Microsoft Edge, and some of them address some of the complaints I have about the products. And so it's kind of interesting because, like Mary Jo, you know, you kind of look at this thing and you think, well, it's built into Windows. I'd like to use it. Mm-hmm. Kind of falls short in certain areas. That extension thing that she mentioned is one of those areas for me. This fixes a few of the problems, not all of them. And so for the first time in Edge, you can take a web app that you're looking at on the web, a web page really, and you can pin it to the taskbar, which is something we used to be able to do in Internet Explorer. It's not as seamless as when you do it with Chrome. It still looks like a web browser and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it lets you keep the things you do all day long together on the taskbar. I think that's important. It supports F11 full screen mode. Actually, almost no one knows this, but Microsoft Edge already today supports a full screen mode, but it's kind of a complicated non-standard keyboard shortcut, which I think is Shift plus Windows key plus Enter probably. That still works in a new build, but now you can do F11 like every other browser. Okay, fantastic. The other big one, let me go look at my list of problems, is actually, I think that's it. Is that everything? Maybe that's everything. What's missing still is support for true web apps, right? Like, so the ability to have Edge-based web apps in the store coming in a future release, maybe even in this coming release. Doesn't have any mobile sync with any mobile client except for Windows 10 Mobile, which no one uses. It's missing extensions, like Mary Jo said, including one that will stop videos from auto-starting when a page loads. I still think the performance is terrible. In fact, you could test this right now yourself. Just right-click anything in Edge and wait for that little menu to appear. It's annoying. And maybe the big one today, because this is something we're looking to implement on our own website, which you see all over the web now, is just notification support. Web notifications are standard. They're supported in Chrome. They work great, and they are not fully supported in Edge, meaning that, I don't know, I have an exact number, but I bet it's close to 10% of the sites in the world that support notifications work in Microsoft Edge. And even when they do, the page has to be loaded in a tab somewhere. If it's going to push you notifications, you know, it doesn't work like a real app notification. So I don't know. To me, it's still, you know, not quite there yet, but maybe someday. My cat is freaking out, so I might have to address her.
What do you think about this ability to compare prices? That was news this week, too, that there would be sort of like a extension that would show you how. There's not a screenshot on this site, but there looks interesting. I mean, there are browser extensions at Chrome in Chrome that will do that. I know they're making deals, I guess, with 12 or 13 different retailers like Amazon, Walmart, eBay. So it won't be like really the lowest price. It'll be the lowest price from all of these giant vendors that have paid Microsoft to be part of this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think this speaks to the importance of the web, right? Microsoft at some time in the past 4 or 6 months, whatever it was, came out and said, you know, 50% of the people's time spent in Windows is spent on a web browser. That is part of the rationale for Windows 10S, you know, that if they do that right, that will be what people need. Mary Jo mentioned earlier how she runs a lot of web apps, and I do as well. That part of the platform is going to improve, but if we kind of look at it in Microsoft's worldview as kind of an edge-centric web world, you know, Edge has to be updated to work with, you know, some of those things I just mentioned, you know, standard web app support, standard web notification support, the ability to acquire those apps from the store, you know, and have them run in what appears to be a native experience. Sorry, my cat is not usually bothering me during a podcast. She knows better than this.
I just saw her tail.
Yeah, there you go. Here. Oh, she doesn't like to be picked up.
She just wanted to be on the show.
Yes.
Now she'll be good.
Yeah. No, not really.
Do you on Edge? Have you run into sites that are not Edge compatible? Somebody who's listening right now just said, since the last Windows 10 build, I can't do any banking with my bank because it's saying it's not compatible with Edge.
Oh. No, I've not seen but I wonder if that's a insider preview build, you mean? Because if it is,
maybe.
I have cat hair all over me.
I feel like I'm getting allergic just watching you.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't notice laggy performance that much on Edge. So that one didn't really bug me.
The performance hits you in these weird ways. It's the type of thing that kind of adds up over time. So imagine I want to link to a post I saw online, right? So you wrote something and I select the headline and I right click and then I wait and then the menu comes up and I select copy. And then I go to the other browser window and I'm going to paste it into a field and I right click and I choose paste. And it pastes in something I copied and pasted 10 minutes ago, not the thing I just copied.
Yeah,
so I did have that. So go back to the original one. You do that. In the process of something that to me is a very efficient thing, you know, when everything works, and it turns it into more of a drag. It adds up, you know, and I don't mean it adds up like in a time element, although it does, but it's more like it just like weighs on you. Like, I just want to get this thing done and get out of here. And I don't know. There's something weird about Edge like that.
That copy and paste bug you just referenced, I hit that bug a lot on Windows 10, and I'm always curious if it's a Windows 10 bug more than it is.
Because I hit it in too many different places. I actually see it in Chrome sometimes, but the big place I see it is in an app that probably no one uses, but there's something called Markdown Pad, which is a text editor. It's actually not supported anymore, so it hasn't been updated in a long time. But I love it for everything but the thing I just said, because I'll right-click. Now I've written an article, and I want to put it into my web forum, select the body, right-click, copy, go over there, paste exactly what I described. It paste in a URL or some other thing from before, and it's like, seriously, like the second time it always works. It's like you have to prime the pump for some reason, but it's very strange.
So, Mary Jo, you had a piece on the new Windows 10 update. Mm-hmm. What do you like about it?
I was interested. There's some new dictation things that are in there that sounded kind of interesting, where you could input English or Chinese text on the desktop using the microphone button. I think that's brand new. And you can even use voice commands for editing and punctuation. So you could, you know, say, end this with a period, blah. So that's something coming that I thought would be useful. They've got a bunch of new Cortana things. This one, I don't know if I like. I think I'm going to not like this, but Cortana Camera Roll Insights was mentioned, where users can create reminders if they take pictures of things like an event poster and store them in your camera roll. So say you want to remember to get tickets for a show, you could take a picture of a poster for it, and then Cortana will say to you, hey, did you want to get tickets for blah, blah, blah? I don't know if I like that. I'm very on the fence about Cortana reminders. I know a lot of people really like them and are finding them helpful. I just, whenever they pop up for me, I'm kind of like, I don't like this. I don't want you telling me what to do. So right. I don't know. Maybe I'm not the best candidate for that one, but.
Well, you're raising an issue that is a big problem today, because now with all these mobile devices we have, anytime you set something up, you've just set up like a world of notifications that you don't want.
I know.
And notifications for them to work properly need to be useful, and they need to be desirable. And it's like an alarm in the morning. Like, you need it, but no one wants it, you know?
I know.
And I think when you set up a new device, especially, you spend the next couple of weeks turning those things off, right?
Yeah.
Like, Skype, you guys will call me on Skype and 8 devices in my office rings, and it's this reminder that maybe I should turn off notifications on a few of those. I mean, getting notifications right is actually a big deal.
I know. It's a fine balance, right?
Yeah.
It's like we say we want these notifications. Mm-hmm. and this is what somebody, you know, as an administrative assistant, which is what Cortana is supposed to act like, that's what you would expect that person to do for you, right? But
I find out whenever I'm smart about it, right? If you were busy writing every day and that person kept opening the door and saying, "Hey, this thing is happening," or "Hey, hey," you know, you'd probably have words with that person and say, "I need you to be a little smarter about this. You see them in the middle of doing something here."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know. I feel like I don't know when they're going to pop up too. Like, they don't always come up, and I'm surprised when certain ones come up. Like, so I was typing something in the review, and it had the word remind in it. And then Cortana took that as set up a reminder. And then this weird reminder came up to me, and I'm like, huh, what's that for? And it took me a while to figure out, it's from what I typed with the word remind, I guess.
I can't make this happen for some reason, but if you use Cortana on a phone, which I think you do, then you know that every morning, not at some normal time like 9 o'clock, but at like 8:53 or something, your phone will go ching. And then Cortana will say, hey, it's going to be 73 degrees today with a low of 50. And blah, blah, blah. Like, it's like this completely useless weather forecast. Like, I just don't even understand what the point of it is, or, you know, but it just started happening.
Huh. Well, I feel like cleaning out my notifications is like cleaning out my closet. Like, I have to set a time to do it. And just like, have I used that notification like in the last 6 months? Right. Have I worn that sweater in the last year? If not, like, toss it out. Like, it's the same sort of thing. It's like on my to-do list, I got to go through. Because, it's on all our devices.
It's also like a Boy Who Cried Wolf thing, right? Because the truth is, some of these things will be useful. Like, you'll want some of these, but they're so annoying and so frequent. But I bet a lot of people just turn them off. You know, it's like, screw this. I'm not doing notifications, you know.
Or if you don't, turn them off, they become, you stop paying attention to them. If they're too many, then your mind just turns
right,
them
that
off.
That's right, that too. Yeah, exactly right. Yep.
So you're annoyed, but you're not even reading it, you know. So
I know. Well, and then on my Android phone, I'm getting notifications from Cortana and Google Assistants, right? So like, random ones show up from different ones all the time. And I'm like, huh, what's that one about? You know, and a lot of times on Google, it's traffic. And I'm like, wait, I thought I turned this off because I don't have a car. So I don't really care about traffic, right? But every once in a while, it shows up. And I'm like, how did that get turned on again?
I told you this, Kurt, I think it was a Cortana or Google. It's one of the two, for some number of months, thought that my workplace was a bar in Walcott Square next town over.
Oh, yeah. That happened to me.
Which,
with
you know,
Rattle.
Sounds really humorous, but I had to look it up to see what it was. I'd never heard of the place. And as it turns out, I've never actually been there. I've driven by it. Like, I've been to the Dunkin' Donuts. It's right next to it. But I've never gone inside there. So how did it think this was my workplace? I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of Cortana, there's some changes possibly coming to Cortana. She'll be more conversational. It'll look like the UI will be maybe be different.
Yeah,
like,
this was something Brad had found. I guess there's actually going to be a couple of changes along these lines in this next version of Windows 10, where in the initial version of Windows 10, they added these two new buttons to the taskbar. Well, actually, one of them is a search box. So you have a Cortana search box over next to Start, and then next to that is a Task View button. And then they're adding all this stuff over in the system tray area, right? So we've got that My People areas coming. There's a control center coming that's going to replace the non-notification stuff from Action Center. So they're kind of overloading this UI. But one of the things that Microsoft has apparently found through their, I guess telemetry is the right word, but it's just usage statistics, is that people don't ever use Cortana. Like, they put it there so people would see it and use it. People don't use it, and a lot of people just turn it off. And so what they're going to do now is put it over in the system tray because there isn't enough crap over there. And this is moving it around the screen. Like, maybe they'll use it if we put it over here. But yeah, I mean, Microsoft's in a tough spot. This is going to be a kind of topic that will come up a lot in the future because, you know, in losing mobile, Microsoft doesn't have this natural in with these next generation services, right? And so they have a hard time on phones, which would be the obvious place. You know, you're out in the world. How do I get to here? Or what do I do? Or what is this thing? And, you know, these are all great features, but they're features people are going to use with Google. They're going to use them with, you know, Siri on an iPhone because that's what's built in. And, you know, when you're on the PC and that's the only place you are, it's a little tough. You know, it's the notion that, you know, a $900 or $1,200 computer is going to be a viable replacement for an Amazon Echo is like, you know, I mean, you know, I guess it's already there, you know, but PCs don't tend to be out in the living room or out in the kitchen. They tend to be, you know, pushed back in an office. You close the door. You don't want anyone to see that thing. So it's kind of tough. And I think they're in a tough spot because they clearly have the AI and machine learning chops to take on Google or Apple or whoever, but they just don't have that delivery system. And even in the context of the one that they do have, what they found is great ambivalence on the part of users. And literally cat hair all over my screen. It's like she just came in here and exploded hair all over my office and then she left.
I would like to see what Alcantara does with cat hair.
Yep.
Oh, man.
It makes it more like a shag carpet, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Or what cats do with Alcantara.
Right.
Would be interesting.
That's true.
You know, actually, I'll tell you what she would do. She would sharpen her claws on it.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yep. You should ask Microsoft Scratching to send pose. You one, Paul, for review.
Oh, I have.
Okay, placeholders are back. Many, many are weeping with joy. Some have moved on. That's what you say. I don't know what placeholders are, so you're going to have to enlighten me.
So Paul and I are both the people who've moved on, I think, yep. Or among the many people who've moved on. So placeholders used to be the thing where you could see in the cloud, all your files, see all of your files that were in the cloud from your PC, right? So I was one of the people, I'm going to take credit for Microsoft killing this feature. I'm one of the people who was so dumb about using placeholders when it was in Windows 8.1 that I just thought when I saw things in the Explorer that automatically they were there on my laptop. And so one time I actually did take my PC on the plane. I didn't have connectivity on the flight. And I'm like, oh yeah, I see the file. It's right there. And then I went to click on it. I'm like, no, it's in OneDrive, right? And I didn't download it, darn it. So that's one of the reasons they did away with placeholders after Windows 8.1. For the last 3 years, people who were very dependent on placeholders have been crying for Microsoft to bring them back because they said it really was part of their workflow. They really needed it. It didn't work for them without placeholders. And in fact, some people didn't even upgrade from Windows 8.1 to 10 because of the lack of placeholders. So this week, Microsoft released an updated OneDrive build that supports placeholders replacement, which is called OneDrive Files on Demand. And if you are an insider in the fast ring and you have that build from last week, 16215, you can test this now. I think Paul's been testing it, actually.
Yep. Yeah, so the thing that's funny about this is it doesn't technically solve the problem you had, right? So if you were using this system, right? You got on the plane, you'd see the file, you click on it, it wouldn't let you get it. So the way they address that is they have better description about where files are. So if you look at that one picture, that's not actually an awesome picture, but the green checkbox there at the top is that thing is available offline. And if you go down to the next picture, you can see how they have like a solid green circle next to some of the pictures. Those are files that I explicitly said I always want to be available offline no matter what happens. Because I need that Wrath of Khan graphic like every day on Twitter. the other big thing is this solves one of the other kind of hidden problems with placeholders, which was that you could install Windows 10 on a device with just 16 gigs of storage. And for a little while, we saw a bunch of low-end mini tablets and kind of stream PC type things that had that kind of storage. 32 gig is probably the more typical, but if you have a terabyte of storage up in OneDrive, which you absolutely could, and you put a bunch of photographs up there or any other file type, it doesn't really matter what it was, the placeholders themselves would take up more than the available storage on that device. So even though you hadn't downloaded any of them, the thumbnails that represented them on the device took up so much space that you could actually run out of space just by displaying placeholders, and there was no way to turn it off. And so they had to fix it. And so this new system, I'm not entirely clear how they do this, but instead of there being individual thumbnails, there's a thumbnail cache. It does grow over time as you go into folders and so forth, but it's significantly smaller than the placeholders were in the past. And so I don't know if they're 50% smaller, 75%, whatever the number is, but significantly smaller. And also actually I should say the other big issue with placeholders was compatibility. Certain applications, including some Adobe applications, would not see those placeholders as files. And so if you went, you know, file open from Photoshop, grabbed a PSD file or whatever it was, double-clicked on it, to Photoshop what that was whatever the placeholder extension was, I don't remember, but it was a PSD dot something. And so it would see it as an incompatible file, and it would never trigger the download, and it wouldn't work seamlessly. And so supposedly with this new system, that problem goes away as well. We'll see. I'm not going to use it. I'm actually going to leave it off.
You're not going to use it? I wasn't sure if I would use it or not.
I don't need it.
It's going to be in Windows 10 Fall Creators Update when it comes out in September or so this year. That's so right. Even if you're not an insider, you'll be able to get it by the fall.
That's right. And I should say, too, it's not on by default, which placeholders were if you signed into OneDrive. Mm-hmm. So the first time you run OneDrive, it actually pops up a box and says, hey, this is what we're doing. Do you want to do it? Yes or no? And then you can go back and turn it on later too, but they'll actually prompt you to turn it on. Because I think it will be confusing to people.
It's going to be confusing because if you're like me and you figured out how to get around this now and you have a sync system set up and then you turn this on, it's like, oh, wait, like, should I do something with the existing system I have? Should I completely stop doing it that way? Can I stop doing it that way? You know, like, I think it's going to introduce some new questions for people who don't quite understand how it all works.
Yeah,
I do. Which is me.
And I like the way I do things now. I mean, you know, part of that, you and I had a conversation back around this time frame because I had always used a very complex directory structure to store all of my documents from the past. And you could go in year by year and find, you know, different topics and find things. And I remember I asked you one time, like, how do you do that? And you said, I don't, I throw it away. I was like, okay, between those two extremes, there is a middle ground of some sort that might be had. What I do is I do keep everything, but I use monthly buckets. So I'll have a folder. In fact, you can see in that article, that will be the date. So 2017-06 and everything I write in June this year will go into that folder and then I move on. And so this particular computer has, actually it doesn't have that many, never mind. But the computer I'm working on right now, for example, I've been using for a while. So if I go into the OneDrive folder, I can see I have March, April, May, and June, plus some other stuff. But normally, you know, if I get a new laptop or something, I'll just sync that month, right? And then next month, I'll sync the next month, and I usually just move on from there. So you keep a much smaller and easily organized, you know, set of files or whatever.
I actually, I don't totally throw things away. I don't want people to think I'm that reckless.
Well, I asked you, I said, how do you find things, you know, that you wrote in the past? No. And you said, I search the web.
Yeah, that is how I do it. I search the web for things I've published. But also, if you look at my OneDrive, it's full of Notepad files that I've saved. And so the way I look for those is I just do a search on the topic or the word and find them. I don't categorize them by text time. Files. Yeah, I don't categorize them by time or anything. And I just do searches. That's how I do it.
Actually, the only reason I do them by time, really, because search works so well, is I will almost certainly, in fact, I definitely will use the same file name for certain graphics. So, for example, if I read a story about X, but this is a terrible example, but if I wrote a story about the Xbox, I would call that Xbox_hero, right? Mm-hmm. So if I save that to the same folder over and over again, I'd have to keep coming up with a unique name, and it's easier for me to, you know, anyway.
I think searching is more organized. I mean, Mary Jo, you said it's very disorganized, but searching actually takes less time than filing everything away.
And it puts the onus of the work where it belongs, on the computer that is supposed to make our lives easier, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So the way I was doing it before was like this human-generated stupidity. I would see that when the machines take off, I'm going to be the first one they wipe out. I'm pointless. I'm just inefficient.
No, you know, I think a lot of people replicate their procedures from paper to what they do digitally. And so I don't, because paper, that's what I throw everything away, because I don't have room to save it. Even in my bigger place now, it's like when I have a piece of paper, it's almost like 1 second after I look at it in the trash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, smart. I mean, we're in the process of trying to move, and you run into this stuff that I feel like we've done a decent job of not having like a hoarder thing going on here, but you still have these boxes of photos or I, you know, drew and painted when I was a kid, and I have all these pictures, you know. It's like, you don't want to throw them out because you made them, but seriously, it was like 30 years ago. And then when you move, you're confronted by it. And I ended up just taking photographs of all of it, or not all of it, not even the ones that I cared about, you know. And then they've been sitting in my cellar for 15 years. Some of them probably made the move to Phoenix and then back from Phoenix, you know, 20 years ago, whatever that was. And now it's like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. You know, and you just finally get rid of it.
You got to think about when you're dead, someone has to look through that.
That's
what I always think about. Like, exactly. You don't want your family to have to do that.
Yeah. I've said that to my parents. You know, they live in this, what did my wife call it? I can't say that on air, a cluttery mess. But I said, you know, God help you if you ever get hit by a bus, because we can't tell what's valuable and what isn't. And I'm just going to pull up a, you know, one of those trailer things, like a dumpster, and I'm just going to throw it out the window, you know, because it's just a mess.
Mm-hmm. Well, moving on from talking about after we're dead, Intel, happy 40th birthday to the x86 processor. Mary Jo, you said that buried in that wonderful announcement that Intel made is a little unhappy secret for Microsoft. Tell us about that. Yeah,
this was so interesting, because I saw the headline on that Intel post and I'm like, oh yeah, they're just celebrating the birthday of 8086, you know. And then a reader or listener of Paul's of mine sent to us on Twitter said, look at the last paragraph of that blog post. And at the very end is a very direct threat, legal threat, about people who are, quote, trying to emulate Intel's proprietary x86 ISA without Intel's authorization. And I'm like, wait, I think they're talking about Qualcomm and Microsoft here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They don't name them, right? They don't say Microsoft, Qualcomm.
How passive aggressive is that? They also suggest that they found out about this from some reports. You know, there are reports that other companies are doing this thing. No. There have been product announcements.
I know.
By the way, your biggest partner.
I know. So as soon as I saw the ending of this, I pinged Intel that night, and I said, is this a reference to Microsoft and Qualcomm? And they didn't, again, came back and would not say that, but they said, you know, we respect intellectual property rights of others and we expect them to do the same. So then I pinged Microsoft and Qualcomm sure. And I'm like, hey guys, do you think this is about you? Cause it sure looks like it is. And neither Microsoft nor Qualcomm seemed bothered by this in the least. They both came out with very similar statements saying, you know what? We recently announced we've got Asus and HP and Lenovo. They're building these always connected PCs. They're going to be out this year. And,
well, so, I mean, this can only be one of two things, right? Either A, they're literally going to try to use legal means to prevent this from happening, which would be amazing. Or B, they're angling for licensing fees, which they couldn't care less if Microsoft and or Qualcomm pays for them, but they're going to be paid one way or the other.
So my thought on that, the licensing fee thing, Microsoft always talks up how much they play ball when it comes to licensing patents and have cross-licensing agreements in place with all the big players. Of course, Intel is among them, right? And that's why I'm like, okay, what part of this hasn't Microsoft licensed or hasn't Qualcomm licensed that Intel thinks they have a leg to stand on?
Right. Well, I think the issue here is that technically Microsoft has nothing to do with this Intel emulation stuff. That's coming from Qualcomm. Like, in other words, Microsoft is taking advantage of it to, you know, but I don't believe Microsoft created it.
So
I could be wrong.
That's an interesting question because if you think about how they've talked about this, right? They've mm-hmm. talked. I thought they kind of talked about it. They being Microsoft in this case, as more of a software thing, right?
Yep.
Like they're going to build a layer, I think, on top of Windows on ARM that does x86 emulation.
Yeah. Oh, look, she has a picture.
Well, you're the one who found that picture. Let's look at that picture, actually. Shall we? That was from the picture in my blog post is from a talk that Microsoft published at the time, a build, right? It shows a diagram and it shows hardware, of course, at the bottom, CPU, graphics, networking, then the Windows kernel. And then on top of that is the whole emulated process thing that's on top of the operating system, right?
All right. This is amazing. It literally says emulated using custom emulator from Microsoft. Good use of the word emulation twice in the same sentence, by the way. there are these times, they don't happen that frequently, when two of the biggest companies in tech will square off against each other. We got it with Samsung versus Apple in court. It was beautiful. Mm. Usually you have to have like a government or state sponsor kind of intervention, like the antitrust stuff against Microsoft or Intel, actually, or Google. Or Apple, to get this kind of level of excitement. But the notion of like Microsoft / Qualcomm and Intel, like just squaring off is,
I know,
just makes this whole job worthwhile.
Oh, man. So I thought Peter Bright on Ars Technica had an interesting take on this whole thing. So he also thought, like, of course, Intel and Microsoft have a patent licensing agreement, right? Like they, of course, do around x86. But then he started talking in his article about this, about extensions that Intel's made to x86. And I don't know what these mean. You may. TSX, SGX, MPE. And he said in his article that his theory is that's what Intel is going to try to get them on, is if they use any of these extensions in building the emulation capability.
Interesting.
So I think that's an interesting theory, because otherwise you're like, of course Microsoft has licensed the technology around x86, right?
So this goes back to like MMX. Right. That's how far this goes, yeah.
Yeah. And so that could be the case, right?
I guess. I mean, I at the end of the day, what I think this is really about is, well, it's the two things. Either they literally are trying to prevent it, which would surprise me, but because when that fails, that's a death blow to Intel right there. But the more likely scenario is them just trying to be paid for it. In other words, if you're going to use our stuff, fine, but we're going to get a chunk of this, and this will help offset the lost revenues from the x86 chips they're not selling to PC makers because they're going with Qualcomm in those machines. right? Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like, you know, Microsoft putting their apps on another mobile platform. It's like, well, okay, so we're not selling the devices ourselves. Let's see if we can at least make the best of the situation and get some money some other way.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like you said, Intel knew Microsoft was going to do this with ARM. I mean, this is not a secret.
I mean, look, if they didn't know about it until December when Microsoft announced it publicly, they certainly knew about it in December when Microsoft announced it publicly.
Yeah.
You know?
So it was just a curious way to announce that, hey, guys, we're rattling the sabers and we're going to see you, you know?
It was also an awesome West Coast passive-aggressive way to do it.
It kind of was,
That's the way we do it out
here. Our mother taught us, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, keep your mouth shut.
Patch Tuesday was yesterday. They're patching XP again.
Yeah.
Where
should we begin?
For once, same WannaCry issues are coming up.
Yeah. So, as part of Patch Tuesday yesterday, Microsoft issued a number of additional patches beyond the regular all-purpose Patch Tuesday patches because they said they've received some information that there could be another kind of mega nation state event like WannaCry. Is it WannaCry or Crypt? I've seen it said both ways.
I don't think there's an official naming service for these. So it's whoever gets there first and whichever catches on fast enough.
Okay. So they're warning of that. And as part of that warning, they said, here we have the patches ready. And if you're on automatic update on an existing version of supported Windows, like Windows 7, Windows 10, you're all patched. You're going to be fine. But if you are running older versions of the operating system, including ones we no longer support, like Windows XP and Windows Server 2003, we're going to give you the patches. And we did that last time for WannaCry because we felt like it was in the best interest of the public to do that, even though those aren't supported, and we're going to do it again with this. So this has created a lot of controversy, which kind of surprises me, to be honest. People like Brad Sams.
Not to name names.
Not to name names. No, he was very vocal about it. He's like, I think this is a terrible thing they're doing. I don't think Microsoft should help the people running XP in these older operating systems. And if they want to get the patch, they should pay for those extra support contracts that Microsoft sells. And they shouldn't just be grandfathered in through these kind of incidents, even though Microsoft says they're not going to be repeatable incidents and they're not going to be doing this all the time. I mean, they've done it twice in a row, so it may give some people a false confidence that they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. I see both sides of this, but ultimately this breaks down to the Star Trek 3 thing, right? The goods of the many outweigh the goods of the one or whatever. You know, the problem isn't that those XP machines will be hacked. The problem is the ramifications of those XP machines being hacked.
So, I mean, right? Is it laziness on these people's part, or is it a financial reasons?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. So, you know, there are still a lot of people running XP, and we know some. Some, I think, even are hosts on Twit.
What? Are you serious?
No, isn't Steve Gibson still running Windows XP?
Steve Gibson, John says.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Siri thinks I'm talking to her now. Hold on, guys. I got to take this. I love technology.
There are some people who still run XP because they think it's the most secure version of Windows ever, and they don't like the telemetry that Microsoft has put in subsequent versions, so they are staying with XP. Okay.
Yikes.
Leave those people there. There are people who are pirates who are running XP, but then there are people who are running XP because of dependencies in software and hardware. Some of these people are just cheap and don't want to upgrade, but some of them actually have dependencies or don't have the money to pay for custom support contracts, and they're still running it. And that was the example of the British healthcare system that got hit with WannaCry. So that's why I think
that's
Microsoft kind of has.
By the way,
sorry.
That's inexcusable for any health organization to be running an out-of-date, unsupported version of Windows. It's just the most irresponsible thing imaginable. It's crazy.
I go to a lot of places where I'm surprised to see XP on people's machines, like dentist office. And I'm always like, oh, wow.
Yeah, no, okay. So my own dentist, I didn't look last time, but yeah, I've seen XP over there. And you got to think they're running like a VB3 app or something that does like the scheduling, you know, whatever goofy, weird UI it has. Yeah. But come, guys, seriously. I mean, it's just go to Best Buy.
But the other reason I think it's really important and good that Microsoft is doing this is if those XP machines are attacked, there's a chance that people who are attacking them could then use those machines to attack other Windows machines, right? So
that was
the
my
idea
point.
Is like let's protect everybody in the circle, even though it's going to make some people say, oh, they're not paying for the support contract. But Microsoft's trying to guarantee that everybody who's a Windows user is more safe by doing this.
Yeah. In other words, even though you have upgraded or you have decided to pay for that XP support, by upgrading or by fixing the problem for the people who have not, we're actually protecting you as well.
Well, the people, if it's a money issue, then getting a Patch Tuesday update is great. But if it's just I don't know, there's something better out there, then they're, you know, if they already don't have automatic updates turned on, they're not going to get these security updates either.
That's why Microsoft went out proactively yesterday on a big campaign and said, whoever you are out there, we're telling you patch your machines because we know about something coming. They didn't really specify what's coming, but it was a pretty dire warning. So if you're listening to this podcast, I would say you should go get the patches and do this.
Have we confirmed that this state-sponsored is North Korea?
No, I don't think we know. Do we?
We don't know. Okay.
I don't think so.
Sorry, I didn't mean to leak that.
Oh, really, Paul?
My mistake.
Are you the one leaking information to Microsoft about why they should be patching?
Oh, anything else with the cumulative updates for Windows 10? Anything worth mentioning? New features?
No.
They're continuing to push out regular ones, right? Regular updates to everybody.
Okay. Yeah, I guess my only commentary on that, and this is something I ran into with my son. I was actually working on some Xamarin stuff down in the cellar and asked me to help him with something. And then his computer started installing an update. And so we sat around like idiots for 15 minutes waiting for it to go through its thing. you know, we understand that there's a Patch Tuesday every month and Microsoft doesn't call it that anymore, whatever. But Windows gets updated on a schedule, and then you reboot the computer every time. But actually, it gets cumulative updates often two times a month now, and maybe sometimes more than that. But one of the promises, if I'm not mistaken, I think with the Creators Update, was that this wouldn't happen so much, right? That these updates would be less disruptive. And look, it's only been a couple of months, but in my experience so far, that has not been the case at all. I mean, I think, in fact, at least twice in the past 48 hours, as crazy as that sounds, I come down to my computer and it's on the lock screen. I type in my PIN and I get back to a bare desktop. It's like it's rebooted in the night, you know?
All right. Well, do we have any Q&As before we get to your tips and picks?
I know you called for them, right?
I called for them, but I got nothing. Everybody knows all the answers.
I know.
Earlier, someone in the chat room, whose name I can't remember now, asked if there were any games that you saw at E3, Paul, that you can't live without.
Well, I mean, for me, of course, the big one is Call of Duty World War II, which, you know, is kind of a PlayStation thing now. So we will get it on the Xbox, but we'll get DLC late, which is irritating. But on the Microsoft side, I think Cuphead, Mary Jo, as you know, is finally coming. This is 2 years in the making.
Cartoons. This is like year of desktop Linux. We've heard Cuphead is coming for years.
Yeah. So I was in a car during the E3 Microsoft presentation, and I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to make fun of this from the car, you know, because I'm driving. I mean, my wife was driving, but I ended up doing it from the phone, so it was okay. But the funny thing is, right before they announced it, I actually made fun of this. You know, they said something like, this is coming in whatever year. And I'm like, yeah, but you said that Cuphead was coming in 2016. And then they announced Cuphead was finally coming. So Cuphead looks cool. more generally, though, I think the cool thing that they did from a games perspective was to highlight a lot of the indie games. And I think that's the type of stuff that doesn't get a lot of play, pardon the pun, for some reason, because, you know, we all focus on the big Activision and, you know, EA type stuff. There was a player unknown Battlefront kind of game. I can't remember the name of it. It looked pretty cool. The new Assassin's Creed game looks amazing, obviously. I'm kind of just generally looking forward to the 4K stuff on Xbox One X, including some of the existing games, which are going to be updated for the new console with 4K graphics and all that. So, I mean, I'm going to have to redo the way I play games because I don't have a 4K display here, but I do have one. So I might have to actually play games on my TV like a normal person.
We'll now, are you now in your new place? Or are you? This is a new place.
No, I'm still in the prison.
Oh. Well, with your new place, you can set up anything however you want, right?
Yes. Yes, that's true. I mean, technically, I could do that here as well, except that I'm leaving, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, so I we have months to go. It's not coming out till November, so. Yeah.
And Dweeble in the chat room was wondering if either of you wanted to speak to the future of machine learning at Microsoft.
Wow, that's a big topic.
I was just going to say,
machine learning is like one of the biggest themes from Microsoft right now. Like if you look at what they are talking about almost daily in across the company in all divisions, it's always how they're using machine learning and other AI technologies to infuse their products and make them better. So they're not alone in this. You know, Google's doing it, Amazon's doing it, everybody's doing it. But for them, it's definitely a corporate priority. They're making a lot of investments right now in like venture investments in companies that have something to do with AI and machine learning. So I would just say it's a huge priority for them across the company, and it will likely become even more so, which is part of my enterprise tip of the week around a reorg that just happened at Microsoft. So stay tuned for more.
All right. Well, we'll get to your tips and picks. But first, I wanted to take a minute to thank Cloudflare. They are a sponsor of this episode of Windows Weekly. We've talked about lag. We've talked about hackers. We've talked about downtime. Cloudflare can help you with all of those and just make you feel more secure. Cloudflare is on a mission to help build a better internet. Cloudflare makes your apps faster, safer, and more reliable, so you can stop worrying about slow loading times, downtime, or getting hacked. Cloudflare is very easy to use. We love Cloudflare here. We've talked to the folks from Cloudflare. They're always transparent, always intelligent. We love talking to them, and we hope that if you are in the need of Cloudflare, we hope that you will take a look. Sign up takes less than 5 minutes. They have a global network of 115 plus data centers. They cache your content and it moves closer to your visitors. Their web optimization features speeds up your code and makes it more mobile responsive. End-to-end, Cloudflare speeds up every request to your site with performant DNS caching, content optimization, load balancing, and more. Makes your site, your app, or your API more secure. Cloudflare doesn't only provide DDoS protection. Their web application firewall is powered by a massive IP reputation that updates for all users. And Cloudflare's 24/7 security team is constantly watching for new vulnerabilities and deploying real-time protection. Avoid cloud provider lock-in no matter what you choose for your cloud compute. AWS, Azure, Google Cloud, a combination of public, hybrid, whatever you choose, Cloudflare works with all of them. Using Cloudflare gives your business the option to use more than one cloud provider so you don't get locked into any one of them. Spread yourself out. Flat pricing for everyone. If you're hit with a DDoS attack or if your site suddenly experiences a surge in legitimate traffic, you will pay the same amount. So don't be afraid. You want visitors. Bring them on. You're not going to pay more. You pay the same amount. Plans range from free to $20 a month, $200 a month, and custom plans for enterprise. Cloudflare is offering Twit listeners a free online chat session with one of their top support engineers to answer any question you might have. So visit cloudflare.com/twit and sign up today. Go to cloudflare.com/twit to get that free chat session to get your questions answered. That's cloudflare.com/twit. And we thank Cloudflare for their support of Windows Weekly. Tips and picks time, the tip of the week. I'm guessing this is yours, Paul, an Xbox One controller.
Yes. Where am I? Okay. Sorry.
So you can design. You can design your own.
I was looking at the tip from April. Like, what is this? last year, Microsoft debuted a service called the Xbox Design Lab, which lets you custom design an Xbox One or an Xbox wireless controller, it's now called. And that was available in the U.S. and Canada. They promised they would start going worldwide with it in 2017. And so effective immediately, you are now able to do this in the U.K., France, and Germany as well. And apparently, they've also made some changes to it so that there are additional things you can customize, including adding black rubberized grips. And there are 4 new color options, 11 new thumbstick colors, some metallic finishes, and so forth. It's kind of a cool thing. It's also kind of a neat gift for someone who is an Xbox fan, and if you have such a person in your life, and of course you do. Also, right before E3 started, Microsoft announced yet another sale on Xbox One S. These things are always on sale, it seems. Technically, the starting price of an Xbox One S bundle right now is $299, but no one should ever pay that much. $250 is the usual, or $249 is the usual sale price, and that is the case now. And so Microsoft Store, participating retailers, if you can get it, I think it is Microsoft, is actually you get another free game you can throw in. So if you can do it that way, that might be a good idea. And then the app pick of the week. I so rarely get to recommend a Win32 app, but Firefox was updated this week, and it finally brings multi-processing to the browser. So it doesn't have one process per tab, but they now can have up to 4 processes for tabs as opposed to 1 in the past. And so that will dramatically speed the performance, especially on a low-end system. It trims down the RAM usage as well. What was the other thing? There was another thing. Maybe that is the other thing. I guess it uses less RAM than any of the other major browsers. And so a couple of small, UI tweaks, not too much. But the big thing is that multi-processing engine, so might be worth checking out.
Can you get Firefox on Windows 10S? Or do they block
it? No,
that?
You cannot.
No.
Mm.
Nope.
Sad. Any other picks from you, Paul?
Yeah, that's everything.
That's it. All right, Mary Jo, enterprise pick of the week. Power BI?
Power BI Premium. Power BI Premium is a new tier of Power BI, which is Microsoft's business intelligence service. And this week at the Microsoft Data Insights Summit, they announced that Power BI Premium is now generally available. So Power BI Premium, which I think I made a pick in some prior week of Windows Weekly, is for enterprise users. It's a new add-on to Power BI Pro that lets you, if you are consuming the data from Power BI but not creating it, to do so for free. So you can add Premium to specific Power BI workspaces that belong to a customer or across all workspaces across the board. And if somebody is just consuming that content and not creating it, they can use Power BI for free. You still, though, if you are somebody who needs to create Power BI content, need to subscribe to Power BI $10 per user per month plan, which is pro, unless you're one of the people who can use the free tier. But most enterprise customers would either be using Power BI Pro or this new Power BI Premium add-on that is generally available now. And I have a related pick to this that kind of came out of last week's rumor of the week on Windows Weekly. So at the end of the show, I don't know if folks remember this, I was talking about some reorg stuff happening with Microsoft's developer evangelism team. And I noted that the head of developer evangelism, Steven Guggenheimer, had moved over to the Microsoft AI Plus Research Group. Well, it turns out there was more to the rumor than that. Right after the show ended, I found out through some sources of mine that there was a much wider reorg happening in the cloud and enterprise group and the AI Plus Research Groups at Microsoft. So this was only announced internally. Microsoft didn't talk about it publicly, but they moved a bunch of people around in those groups. They took a few people who had been working previously on the data platform, and they now move them to the cloud, a new cloud plus AI group. They are kind of redistributing responsibilities of some of the products like Data Lake and DocumentDB and Cosmos DB. And the guy who was heading up Power BI, whose name is James Phillips, is taking on a much broader role. He's going to be taking on some of the Dynamics CRM related capabilities at Microsoft now. So there was a lot of internal shuffling in cloud and enterprise. I'd say one of the biggest takeaways is watch Microsoft's AI plus research group, because they're lining up a lot of really heavy hitters at the company in that group. They're moving a lot of the big name, well-established people who've been with the company for a while to that group. So I would expect a lot more to be coming from that group in Microsoft's next fiscal year, which starts July 1. So that's enterprise pick number one.
And enterprise pick number two?
Yeah. Instead of doing a code name this week, I'm going to do one more enterprise pick because, for one, we haven't had enough of them. You know, we have to offset the gaming stuff from earlier in the show.
True.
Wow.
but also, I've been getting this question a lot, so I thought I would make it the enterprise pick. People are asking me about when is Microsoft Teams, you know, Microsoft Slack competitor, going to get guest access. This is something that it does not currently have, and it's kind of a deal breaker for people who want to implement Microsoft Teams more broadly. So, I thought Microsoft had said early June they were going to start rolling this out, but I went back and looked at my notes, and they actually said back in March that Teams will start getting guest access before the end of June, that it's going to start rolling out then. So I'd say we're probably within a few days since the end of June is approaching till you start getting guest access added to your Microsoft Teams accounts. And I don't think it's something that's going to happen all at once, but it's definitely something coming very soon. So I just want to let people know that because I've gotten the question a few times lately.
GM93 in the chat room just posted this link to an article about the Citrix Receiver, which is a way, I guess, that you can get Chrome or Opera or Firefox or Vivaldi or other apps not allowed on Windows 10 S. What do you think about this? I haven't looked into it, but do you think this
is... So this is only for... I believe for fairly large enterprise customers. I saw Citrix announce this, and I think what it is related to is a couple of things that they have already called Citrix Zen Desktop Essentials, and what's the other one called? They roll right off your tongue on these names. And what is it? ZenApp Express? I can't remember. Well, anyway, Citrix has already announced a couple of ways that you can run Windows 10 desktops and the apps on them through Azure. And I think this thing the person in the chat room just referenced is just the client piece of that, though I may be wrong. And if it is, yes, it is a way that you could run Chrome on Windows 10 S. But in order to do so, I think you would have to have the Citrix backend, and that is very expensive and something pretty much only enterprise customers have.
It's a remote solution. It's not running.
It is, right? Yeah. So it's not something like you or me as an average user would use. It's more if you're a company and your company has a license to Citrix on the back end, maybe you could use that.
That makes sense. All right. I guess we're ready. Are we ready for the beer pick of the week?
Sure.
Is there music or anything for the beer pick of the week or graphics?
No.
Maybe we should have kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to have a gong because it's a good thing, not a bad thing.
But. No, I like the Oompa. Yeah, some sort of German music.
Right.
Yeah. Or just like sounds of a bar. I see Alex moving around, but maybe next week.
Well, maybe next week we could have that. Yeah. So this week's beer pick of the week is something I haven't made. I don't make a lot of beer picks for brown ales, but, you know, sometimes you just want a brown ale. And there are a lot of really good craft beer type brown ales now. So a lot of people, when they think of brown ales, they think of kind of like either a weak kind of watery brown ale, more traditional. I won't name names because I know it will offend somebody who is listening. But... it seems like brown ales fall into two camps, like the really weak, watery kind of old style brown ale or these really over the top brown ales you see now where they add like raisins and peanut butter and coffee and all this kind of stuff, which I like, but you got to be in the mood. Sometimes you just want a basic brown ale. And so if you're able to get this one, it's called Barrier Earth. It's from Barrier Brewing in New York. I would very much recommend it. It's like a straight up brown ale, nothing fancy, nothing special. It's around 6% in alcohol, and it's just a really nice brown ale. Brown ales, for people who aren't familiar with them, they're brown, obviously.
They're also
kind
ales.
Of like on the amber scale. And they're just kind of like a middle ground to me between an amber and a stout or a porter. I don't know if that's definitely not the technical way to describe a brown ale, but Barrier Earth, if you can find it and you want to try a brown ale, I would very much recommend it.
So it's a New York brewing company. Oh, that's some lovely music.
Oh, it's open music. Good.
That's nice. Perfect. We have to add that.
Yes, yeah. We'll have to use that every time. Will you have a beer pick next week when you're in Harlem? That's the big question for the party.
Oh, we will.
Okay, good. Okay, so what's happening at the Philharmonic in Harlem?
Yeah, of course, it's Dutch, so it's like the Philharmonie or whatever.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know if that was a typo or not.
But it is literally the Philharmonic.
Okay.
So on June 21st, Mary Jo and I and Brad and Tony Redmond are going to be doing a kind of a day two closing keynote, which is called Office 365, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. That runs from 5:45 to 6:45 local time. The meetup is at 6:45, and then Windows Weekly is at 8 p.m., you know, local time. We were told that anybody can get in. I don't know if that includes the Office 365 closing keynote, but I would kind of hope so. I don't see why not.
Yeah, I think it does.
My advice to you, it does include that? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Okay. So my advice is to get in early or get there early if you're going to come not because you're not going to get in, but because I think there's a little bit of a process where you have to get a tag or, you know, like a badge to get in or whatever. So you just want to provide a couple of minutes for that. So let's see, 5:40, you know, if you could get there at 5:30 or something like that, that should do it.
All right. And then Windows Weekly will be live at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. Is that 8 p.m.
Harlem time? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's the, wait, is that right? I don't like, I can't do the most simple of math.
Yep.
Yeah. That's right. So it's the normal time, right? So
here.
8 p.m. Yep. in there is 2 p.m. Here is 11 a.m. for you guys in California.
In New York, it's 8 p.m.?
Nope.
Not Harlem.
Sorry, we weren't really clear.
Netherlands. Harlem with two A's.
Yes.
So we weren't speaking of New York.
Those aren't the spellings everywhere. That is the real names. Yeah, yeah.
I was just faking being confused. So anyone out there who was confused.
Every time anything related to time zone and scheduling comes up, I literally have a brain freeze right then.
So no, 8 p.m. So it's same time, same place. And of course, you can watch Windows Weekly or listen whenever you want because we are available on demand whenever you are ready to hear these wonderful two Windows experts speak kindly and sometimes not so kindly about all kinds of Windows topics. So, join them next week. I don't know if Leo is back. I don't think I am hosting, so maybe you'll have Padre or maybe it will be a surprise. Maybe you will have me. Maybe you will. John's shaking his head. Maybe you'll have no one. It will.
Yep.
Whoever it is, we'll just leave it as a surprise. So you'll tune in no matter what. Mary Jo Foley. Anything else that we have not mentioned that you need to know about?
No, I don't think so. I'm getting excited to go back to Amsterdam. So if you're coming to Office 365 Engage, look for us.
There are going to be a lot of people there. I haven't seen them. Like Paul Robichaud is going to be there. Todd Clint will be there. Brian Desmond's going to be there. Obviously, Tony Redmond will be there. Stephen Bank we'll see again, which will be great. That's going to be nice.
So I have just suddenly remembered that Leo will be back. He'll be back. He comes back, I think, Sunday. but I think he'll be back in the office on Tuesday. So he will be not only back, but rested and ready for you guys. So Mary Jo Foley at Mary Jo Foley on Twitter, allaboutmicrosoft.com, Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, and Paul Thurrott on Twitter.
Just the rot.
Just the rot. Just the rot.
Literally at just the rot.
Just
at the rot.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you everyone watching or listening. You can get this show at twit.tv/WW. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Megan Maroney, just at Megan Maroney. Subscribe to the show. Write to the show with your questions. Rate the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you can rate the show, and join us next week, us meaning Paul and Mary Jo and Leo in Harlem with two A's. And if you are there, then join them live.
Yeah, please don't show up in New York City expecting a C's.
No. No.
Good to know. Yeah. I mean, if you are in New York City and you don't plan on being in the Netherlands, you can stay home and listen as you normally do. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or you could go to Rattle and Hum and watch a show from our office away from home.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.